This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great weekend. And your number, if you'd like to join our conversation this morning and any day, is 877-217-5757. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Hats off to the LSU basketball team in the NCAA tournament as a number 3 seed. The Tigers will face Ivy League champ Yale, the number 14 seed, in the East Regional matchup Thursday, Jacksonville, Florida. Tip-off is 11:40 a.m., so you'll get started early, and LSU, of course, will be a resounding favorite as the Southeastern Conference champ against the champion of the Ivy League. Brady Whitten is with us, a man from New Jersey who's been in Louisiana for several years. So the last 7, he's been pastor of First United Methodist Church, one of the biggest churches in our community. How many congregants do you have?
A little over 4,000.
4,000 members. What if they all showed up for the same service?
We'd be in trouble.
That's a big church, but it doesn't seat 4,000, does it?
No, about little under 1,000 if you pack them in.
Okay, well, you have been on the front lines, your church has, on some sensitive issues, and some people, of course, who are gay are not happy about the Methodist Church and its hierarchy, deciding that at least for the immediate future there will be no gay marriage or same-sex marriage and no gay clergy. 12 million members worldwide, it's a big church. What are your thoughts?
Well, I tend to be a progressive on this issue, and while I would not violate the rules of the church, so as you mentioned, currently we're not permitted to perform same-gender marriages and we don't ordain people that are in same-gender relationships, I tend to be progressive, like a lot of Methodists do on this issue, and that really comes from a couple of places. First of all, personally, I had an uncle who died in 1989 of AIDS, and it was my mother's younger brother. And he was grew up in the church, grew up in a Methodist church, and it was communicated to him by that church that being a homosexual man was not acceptable, and so he left the church. But I think what my mother really struggled with was when it came time for her baby brother to pass away. I don't think he really quite had a sense of his place with God, and my mother is a Presbyterian now, by the way, and so it's personal for me. I also think that, there's some evidence that gay teenagers have a higher rate of suicide than others. And so I just think it's something that the church needs to be very sensitive about. And so that's where I stand on the issue. But the United Methodist Church right now upheld in St. Louis at the end of February that we will continue our prohibition on same-gender marriage and the ordination of people in same-gender relationships.
Well, I'm impressed that they actually released the percentages, 53% in favor of keeping the prohibition and 47% in favor of changing it. So it was a close vote. But certainly this is an issue that other churches have dealt with. I'm a Roman Catholic, and gay people don't get married in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And you can't say you're gay and be a priest, but I'm sure there are people who are gay, who are in the clergy. But this is a case in which the momentum is probably in the other direction. Do you see it changing sometime soon, or is this going to be in place for a while?
Well, the interesting dynamic in the United Methodist Church is that some 5.5 million of our members are outside of the United States. And those folks in Africa, in some Asian countries, tend to be a little more traditional in their understanding, and they actually now represent a majority when it comes to our general conference, which is our legislative sort of assembly. And so when you combine the conservatives in the United States with traditionalists outside the country, the chance of this sort of turning in a progressive direction in the United Methodist Church is actually growing slimmer, some feel. And I think that's why many felt like this general conference, again, that happened at the end of February of 2019, just a few months ago, was sort of a watershed for the church to sort of say that this is our chance to either change this or the writing's on the wall. And I think a lot of people who are centrist and progressive in the Methodist Church feel like unless a dramatic change happens in the church somehow, like a restructuring, that we will probably continue in this traditional stance.
Again, your number for Pastor Brady Whitten of First United Methodist here in Baton Rouge. Last 7 years, by the way. Time flies. It is second, the church is, only to the Southern Baptist Convention in size. And the New York Times, in its story a few weeks ago when this vote happened in St. Louis, noted that there are many types of people who are in your church, from Hillary Clinton to Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. So that's an eclectic group. Yep. Just over half of the Methodists, according to the Times, say they are Republican, compared with 35% who say they are Democrats. The majority of adherents believe abortion should be legal, and more than half are in favor of stricter regulations to protect the environment. So those are issues that, of course, may be at odds with some more fundamentalist churches. Mm-hmm. But you are speaking out. Now, there aren't many Roman Catholic priests who will speak out, even if they disagree with the Pope. They're mm-hmm. unlikely to come on a radio show. Are you going to get any flack for this?
Oh, I'm sure I will. I preached a sermon two Sundays ago, the Sunday after the General Conference. And I think what the concern coming out of General Conference was that, is what the news was saying, is that the Methodist Church votes against gay people. And I think a lot of clergy in the Methodist Church, even some who might have been a little hesitant to speak their minds, have felt an obligation to do that because of the potential harm that can be done to LGBTQ folk and to this idea somehow that the church or even God is against them. And I think one of the things the Methodist Church, all Methodists, would be clear to say is that we believe that all people are of sacred worth. And I think there's just been a desire among many clergy people in the Methodist Church and lay people to make sure people understand we love gay people, even though we may not disagree on same-gender marriage. And I think that's sort of the biggest issue, I think, is should the church bless same-gender marriages?
Now, your mother, you said it was your uncle?
Uncle, my mother's,
her brother?
My mother's younger brother, yes.
Who died with AIDS, mm-hmm. Left the church.
Yeah, I mean, basically... you know, what the Methodist Church says is that the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. But what a lot of gay people hear is, I'm incompatible with Christian teaching.
Right.
And so would you want to be a part of a church that says that? Amazingly, we do have a lot of gay members. And
I'm sure you do.
Yeah. And not just First Methodist, but the United Methodist Church as a whole. And, I think we need to recognize that the way we talk about this can be harmful and hurtful to people, and I just think it requires a great amount of care and compassion.
Now, some conservatives have left the Episcopal Church because of their stand the other way on gay rights. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to somebody who's in your church who disagrees with this decision and says, look, I'm more at home with a church that finds me a welcome member in my life and what I do with how I live my life?
Ask that again. I didn't.
Well, somebody who may feel more comfortable, let's say, in the Episcopal Church, do you tell them go ahead and go, or do you try to keep them in your fold?
So one of the things I love about the United Methodist Church, and I've been a Methodist virtually my whole life since probably about first grade, is we're what's known as a big tent church. And so there are liberal Methodists, there are conservative Methodists, and you've named some things that sort of illustrate that. And so the breaking point for me, or the kind of line, is can you live with other people who disagree with you? And I think the Methodist Church has done that well for many, many, many years, since 1968, when the Methodist Church was formed. I don't know, maybe it has something to do with the way our culture mm-hmm. is now, but it seems that fewer people are able to do that, to sort of say, look, we can disagree about certain issues and still maintain community together. So I would hope if John Wesley had a famous expression, he said, though we may not think alike, may we not love alike. And so if you think you can love other people and for us as Christians claim the lordship of Christ and stay in a church with people who disagree with you, then please stay. If you can't, then maybe there are places for people on the far left and on the far right, there may be places that they would be happier than in sort of a church like the United Methodist Church.
Well, United Methodists, according to the New York Times report, have one of the oldest populations in the country, a median age of 57. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get young people with stands like this?
It's difficult. It's a challenge. And while I don't think the church should ever craft its teachings based on popularity or what's going to bring people in the doors, it is something we need to be cautious about. And I think how we talk about this issue is important. you mentioned we certainly have people in our congregation, and I have some dear friends who are much more conservative than I am on this particular issue, but I consider them, they are thoughtful, compassionate, kind people who just draw a line when it comes to same-gender marriage. I will point out, however, that there are people out there who are bigots, and there are hateful people out there, and there are homophobes, and I think, again, how we talk about this, the language we use, are we coming at it from a position of love, or are we coming at it from a position of condemnation? I think that's going to play a big part in how people hear the message, especially young people.
We have another segment to go with Brady Whitten, the pastor of First United Methodist here in Baton Rouge. 7 years. We remember Chris Andrews at that church on North Boulevard for many years, and he now is with Jubilee Pioneers. By the way, they meet every Monday night at the Bocage Racquet Club, and I'm sure Reverend Andrews would welcome you. But Brady Whitten is in the pulpit every Sunday, and he spends a whole day preparing his sermon. And we'll talk with him some more. Your number again is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Pastor Brady Whitten of the First United Methodist Church is in the house, and he's commenting on a decision, 53-47% last month in St. Louis, to keep a prohibition on same-sex marriage and gay clergy in the United Methodist Church, which is the second largest Protestant denomination in the country. It's been growing in Africa. About 30% of the church's members are now from African nations. But the church's slogan is open hearts, open minds, open doors. Is this in opposition, this decision, with the motto of the church?
It's funny, I've heard a lot of people commenting on that. So that was an advertising campaign that the United Methodist Church did in 2001 and really caught the imagination of a lot of people, and a lot of people thought it represented who we are as United Methodists well. And because, as I mentioned, we tend to be what I would call a big tent church. It's one of the things I love about the United Methodist Church. A lot of people love that about the United Methodist Church. But, yes, there are a lot of people who are saying, okay, so open hearts, open minds, open doors. Is that actually true? I think some people would say it is, and some people would say it is not. But one of the things to point out about that is, you know, that's not a biblical phrase. It's really not even in Methodist history. It was kind of just an advertising campaign. But again, it did capture, I think, the imaginations of a lot of people.
Well, according to polling, 6 in 10 Americans who are United Methodists believe homosexuality should be accepted in the church, but. Mm-hmm. In Africa, what's the sentiment in Africa regarding this?
Well, it's always dangerous to lump people together entirely, but I think it's probably fairly safe to say that most of our African Methodist brothers and sisters, and certainly the delegates that came to represent us in St. Louis, were overwhelmingly traditional in this area.
Meaning,
they oppose same gender marriage.
Okay,
and I do think it's worth noting that. While there is no official date on this because the votes are confidential, that some have estimated, but just based on sort of some straw polls and conversations with people, that about 60% of the delegates to General Conference from North America, from America, voted in favor of changing the church's stance. And so it does mark quite a sort of line of delineation between those Methodists who are outside the United States and those who are inside the United States.
All right. Question from Maria asking if people in your church can get married in other ways without the church's blessing and still be members of the congregation.
Absolutely. So we have members of our church who are in same-gender relationships who are married, and they are welcome to be a part of our church. I can tell you our church in particular is a very welcoming, affirming, loving congregation. But no, they cannot get married in our sanctuary, and United Methodist clergy can't perform those ceremonies.
And here's one from Colleen, and I thought this might come up, about the decision for your church to move out of Together Baton Rouge.
Yeah. I'll say this about that. Our church council released a press statement about this, and our decision was really not based on whether we agree or disagree with anything Together Baton Rouge was doing in the community. When I moved to First Methodist in 2012, the Together Baton Rouge issue was at a sort of a heated pitch because of the CATS tax. And it created great, great, great conflict in the life of our church. We had church council meetings where we could conduct no other business because this is all we were fighting about. And it seemed, because of the battle that was going on with about ITEP, that that fevered pitch was kind of going to come to a head again in the life of the church. And we just made the decision that we really couldn't afford to have that kind of conflict in the life of the church again. But it really, we have members who are big fans of Together Baton Rouge, and we have members who are critics. And, you know, again, we're a big tent church. But the question was, were we able to do our business as a church and do some, a lot of the other great things we do without it becoming a big distraction? And that really was the reason.
For those who know Pastor Witten, they probably are aware that he had a near-death experience at 46 2 years ago. What happened?
So I was walking my daughter to the bus stop. Zoe was 2 years ago, so about 12 years old, and started feeling a little dizzy and I mean, passed out dead in the middle of the street. Hit the street face first, broke my jaw, and took him a few days to figure out what was going on. I did not show any signs of a heart attack. When the ambulance got there, I was in AFib, which is a treatable heart condition. But lo and behold, what they discovered was I had gone into ventricular fibrillation, and my heart had stopped. Mm-hmm. And 2 days later, after a heart catheterization, discovered that I had I needed five bypasses. So my widowmaker was 100% blocked twice.
Ooh.
And apparently the reason I survived was when I hit the ground, I broke my jaw, so the breaking of the bone shot adrenaline into my bloodstream, and the impact on my chest started my heart again. So, yes, I feel like I've gotten kind of a second lease on life here.
And you've lost 40 pounds.
Yes. One of the things my heart – I said, all right, what do I need to do? They said, lose as much weight as you can. Obviously, I've changed my diet. I eat plant-based now, so not – I try to keep all animal products out of my diet and do about 40 minutes of cardio 6 days a week.
And your sermon yesterday was about fasting, right?
Yeah. So it's been interesting. Out of this experience of having to sort of change my eating and living, I have found maybe something that as a younger man I wouldn't have admitted as freely, that, you know, discipline can be a good thing. And so I've been challenging our congregation to think about just, you know, the things that sort of drive them, the desires that drive us, and the biblical call to fast, which is to sort of deny some of those desires for a time as a way of sort of self-examination and also drawing closer to God. So we've been talking about that, and had 220 people who indicated that they would participate in a one-day fast last week. And it's been interesting to discuss and explore together.
Mm-hmm. Well, we Catholics give up meat on Fridays during Lent. That's a huge sacrifice in Louisiana,
right, yeah.
Isn't it?
So you can get a big piece of fried fish and put some crab meat on top of it. And I call that suffering for Jesus, right?
Well, some places it's easier than others, but the Lenten season, I think all Christians would acknowledge that it's very important.
Absolutely.
And
I think we need those times to kind of step away from life the way we normally live it.
Now, you talked about how there's this increase in suicides, and some of that is related, of course, I'm sure, to sexual orientation and people not feeling welcome. Is that a concern that some people who feel ostracized might decide that this world's just not a good place to be in?
It certainly is for me. I was part of a panel discussion a few years ago. The LSU a cappella choir did a piece that was around the story of Matthew Shepard. And Matthew Shepard was a young man who was beaten to death because he was a homosexual. And one of the questions that was asked when I was on that panel is, what part does the church play in some of the violence against LGBTQ people? And as the religious representative on the panel, I had to admit that I think the church does play a part in that. Because the sort of moral authority that we give to some people, and I'm not saying this is everybody, but to some people, to say that homosexuality is not godly, I think adds to some people's sort of fear and even hatred towards gay people. And I think gay people experience that. They know that. That's why for such a long time, gay people felt like they had to be closeted. They couldn't tell people about. You know, their sexual identity. And I can only imagine as a teenager, as difficult as it is coming into, you know, learning who you are to be a gay teen and to struggle with that. I think from what I've read, one of the biggest issues with gay teens and the increased rate of suicide is the fear of rejection by their families.
Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with Pastor Witten.
Yeah, Pastor, in order to be a Christian, is it necessary for a person to believe that Christ walked on water, rose from the dead, ascended to heaven, and that those things actually happened?
Good question. So I will tell you there was a time in my life as a Christian person who followed Jesus and sort of accepted Jesus as the Lord of my life that I wasn't sure if I believed those things. And it certainly didn't stop me from pursuing the Christian life. It was just one of those things that I could kind of park on the side and say, well, I'm not sure what I think about that, but I'm going to follow Jesus. But I'll tell you, as I've gotten a little older, I don't doubt those things as much as I used to. Sometimes I think, well, why not? Why not?
There you go. Thank you, Pastor Witten. Good to visit with you. Hopefully, be back for a return visit soon.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll return with Linda DeLotte of the Associated Press on the Gridiron Show after this timeout.